welcome everyone to Rock M Nation Podcast. This is a brand new episode of Dive Cuts after a little extended time off. We're back. I am your host, Sam Snelling. With me, as always, is everybody's best friend, Matthew J. Harris. Matt, how are you?
I'm well, sir. Rested. And apparently we have a month until real basketball games begin, so that's always a good thing.
Yeah, it is closing down and closing down fast. And you took some time off, went to Oregon, had a nice trip. Everything go okay?
Yeah.
If you follow Matt on Twitter, you probably saw that he scored some whiskey while he was out there.
Yeah, we flew into San Francisco and drove up to Portland. And the beautiful thing, and if you're in San Francisco, is everyone there likes wine or just really, really expensive bourbon. And they'll just leave like Eagle Rare or E.H. Taylor on the shelf at MSRP. And you can be the lucky one to pick it up and then find another bottle of E.H. Taylor in Oregon, which is a liquor control state. Which is fantastic because, again, MSRP. Downside, you learn that every bottle of Antique 107, Stag Junior, and anything kind of fun is usually at a spot because it's been reserved by a bar. So that is the fun lesson you learn, but it's still interesting to go out there and also find a place called Scotch Lodge where you can spend entirely too much money pouring bottles of bourbon that you will never be able to buy or find in everyday life. So it was a good trip. My wife was entirely way too tolerant of said whiskey sidetracking. But we got some hikes in and
yeah,
I
really have to commend both of our wives who, put up with, I know mine puts up with my, whiskey fascination, to an nth degree. I'm sure yours does as well.
No, my wife is, my father-in-law is a bigger bourbon junkie than both of us. So, her preferred pour was I think it was like a anniversary bottle of, Blanton's is what she did last week. So that was her pour, was, like a 1995 Blanton's or something absurd. So, my wife was bougier than I was and took a deeper cut than I did on the bourbon side. So, Let's not give Ellery Harris too much of a pass on that front.
Well, Matt, I am excited about this podcast, mainly because we get to talk to Eric Bossy. And as you know, and as I know, Eric is probably the most well-known and with good reason national recruiting analyst type. I think maybe a few years ago, like that entire space was filled a little deeper with Evan Daniels and Ryan Snow and maybe a few others. But Eric is the last guy standing as all those guys like took jobs doing other things.
One works for CAA, one's like...
Yeah, Daniels went to work for CAA. Brian Snow took a job like on a college staff,
he's basically like the GM recruiting coordinator for Penn State. And then
that's right, Micah Shrewsbury, Jeff Goodman's favorite name to float out for potential head coaching.
Got to get that Boston Celtics love. Got to give that out there. Got to pump that name, baby.
Yeah.
And then I think another one of Eric's former colleagues got a job in the front office of the Oklahoma City Thunder. So, Corey Evans got a job in the Oklahoma City Thunder. So, Eric has been alongside some people who have cashed in, which only begs the question of when is Eric cashing in and who's going to be the one to do it?
Instead, he's building an empire at 247 Sports. Like 247 Sports, like you and I have always used the 247 Sports composite to sort of, when we're talking about recruitings, because, recruiting analysts will have slightly, usually everybody knows who like the five best guys are, right? Like it's very clear when, you watch DeAndre Ayton or Michael Porter Jr. or guys like that they're elite. They're different. But it is a lot more challenging to be able to pick up on maybe like who's number 40 and who's number 75. And I think that's where you start to see things fluctuate a lot. And I always like to I always think Eric does a good job with his analysis and all that kind of stuff. So we are going to get into a conversation with Bossy, and I think we should just hop to it now. You good with that?
I'm good with that. Let's get to it.
And we would like to welcome into the podcast the national recruiting writer. Everybody knows who he is at this point. If you're not following him on Twitter, you're probably not all that interested in recruiting, which would be surprising if you're listening to this podcast. But with us is Eric Bossy. Eric, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. I appreciate you guys having me on.
Always like to talk recruiting. Everybody loves recruiting. It's always the big topic. And for the first time in several years, Missouri basketball actually won a recruiting battle. And that was with, I believe he's top 50. Matt can correct me. I'm always losing track of how guys fluctuate. But a four-star prospect out of the KCK side, and that's Aiden Shaw. Eric, you've had a chance to really see a lot of Aiden over the years. But first, I kind of want to talk about like the impact of Consett Martin actually winning a recruiting battle and what that sort of means. Like how big of a get is this for the program?
I think it's a great get. It's an important get. Like you said, there were a lot of high-level programs, including one over in Lawrence that Tiger fans aren't too fond of, that wanted Aiden, you know, or wanted him to wait around a little bit. And he's like, no, I've got where I want to go. I'm going to get this done. And a lot of that has to do with relationships that Konzo Martin and Chris Hollander in particular got in there and built with Aiden and his family to get him to understand that, hey, you need to come to where not only you're wanted, but where you're needed and where people are going to appreciate you the most. I think that's what really stuck out with them and what allowed them to get him. And, you know, we've got him ranked number 47 at 24/7. Is he one of those guys who's going to walk in and put up crazy numbers right away? Probably not. He's got some developing to do, but in terms of just raw talent and upside and the ability to really blossom on the college level, there's a lot to like there with Aiden Shaw.
Eric, I was going to say, we talked about it after Aiden committed, was you have to kind of change your definition of plug and play for a kid like him. But if anyone watches him for any length of time, with Mo Cannon out on the EYBL, you can see that defensively he's as skilled as anyone out there. I think I watched all their pool play games, and over the span of 4 days, he spent, you know, time guarding ones, twos, threes, and fours, notably among them Imani Bates. It just seems like aside from having the physical tools, he's just really, really fundamentally sound, and also seems to take a lot of pride in that end of the floor. What kind of defender is Missouri getting, or should fans know about him, at least at that end of the floor?
Potentially an elite defender at the college level. He's highly switchable. Like you mentioned, you know, one through four, he can defend because he's not only long, he's doesn't just jump high, but he's got very good quickness laterally. He's got good anticipation. Now, strength is going to be something that he's going to have to address when he gets to college, but that's pretty typical of most high school kids, even as much of a freak as they're turning into athletically these days. The strength portion is generally the biggest one, strength, and then just terminology and adjusting to the overall, I guess, schemes in college. But just from pure natural ability and what he's shown, he is one of the best defenders in the class and certainly one of the defenders with the highest ceiling to go out and be a guy that, you know, if he gets caught in a ball screen and has to go out there and take on the point guard, he can do that. And he can switch and get back in. He can help you off the help side with blocking shots. There's just a lot that he can do. And he's the kind of defender that programs really want. And, you know, I think we see with Mizzou, they're really starting to lean towards a lot of these kind of just long, athletic dudes that can cover a lot of ground, right? And he certainly fits right into that and potentially at a really high level.
And I'm also kind of curious because, during the coverage of the announcement, one of the comparisons that you made with Aiden was that of Jeremy Grant. And obviously, you know, Jeremy's career since he's gotten to the NBA and over the last few years has really kind of taken off as to what level of player he is. So when we talk about, you know, players and sort of, you know, comparisons, Was your comparison with Jeremy Grant more like where Jeremy was, at that same stage, along with the kind of ceiling that you maybe saw of from Grant at the time, or is it more just about who Aiden is right now?
It's a lot of things. The important thing with comparison that I know you guys get, but sometimes what happens is we make a comparison and people say, oh, he just compared Aiden Shaw to Jeremy Grant. That means he's equal to Jeremy Grant. Well, no, not necessarily, but it's mostly based on where they were at the same age. I mean, they're about as close physically, athletically, size, you name it, as two guys can be. The things that Jeremy was good at this age are the things where Aiden has his strengths. The areas that Jeremy Grant was a little deficient in at this age are the areas that Aiden needs to work on, becoming a more consistent jump shooter, becoming a little bit better ball handler, embracing this kind of combo forward role, small ball four type thing that has really allowed Jeremy Grant to blossom. Now, does that mean that Aiden's eventually going to be a 20-point scorer in the NBA? I think that's a lot to ask, right? But who knows? But does Aiden Shaw have tools and upside that translate to the NBA someday? Yeah, absolutely, if he continues to work hard and keeps taking steps in the positive, in the right direction. So that's where I think the comparison comes from. It's more of where they are at the same age, but a little bit of that potential upside fits in. And I don't think it's outrageous to say that Aiden Shaw could potentially play in the NBA someday.
Eric, you mentioned the offensive sort of development, and I remember when I wrote a couple weeks ago, we talk about role and how that switches between the high school and the AAU level. You know, at Blue Valley, I looked at his shooting numbers and he's about a 35 or 36% shooter on okay volume, from the high school line. But then you see him, at Peach Jam and, playing more of a little bit more of a guy who's running the wings in transition, an off ball cutter, sort of asked to get on the glass and sort of not be the focal point of an offense. So I'm just sort of curious, you've seen him at Blue Valley, probably obviously more than any of us have. How does his game sort of shift or mutate, when he moves from the high school level to playing on a little bit more of a talent laden roster with Mokan on the offensive end?
Right. It's all about roles. And it's also about what you do changes because of the level of competition you're playing against, other than when they play Bishop Miege once or twice a year, there's not many dudes or teams that Blue Valley and Aiden Shaw are running into that have anyone who can remotely match up with him athletically, right? I mean, there's some good athletes around town, but it's not like he's seeing a lot of elite high-end athletes on a regular basis in Kansas City high school basketball. That's just the way it is. We know this. It's not a dispute. So you make that switch to the summer with Mokan, you're playing with a lot of other really high-level guys. They had Bryson Warren, who signed with OTE. They had Terrace Reed, all these guys. So your role does change. And I think that the role he played for them is probably a little bit closer to the type of role you could expect him to play early on in college. Maybe there'll be a little bit of a meeting in the middle somewhere. But early on, I think he's a guy who's going to make his mark with hustle plays, with defense, with getting out in transition and finishing lobs, cleaning up some scraps on the offensive glass, hitting an occasional jump shot here or there, as he continues to upgrade that ball handling and become a little bit more trusting in that jump shot. A lot of those jump shots he's taking on the high school level, they're just wide open because guys are just like, hey, if you want to beat us shooting threes, we'll let you do that, right? Like, you got to pick your poison, because if he goes and posts hard or really makes up his mind to get to the basket every time, well, they're going to be in trouble because he's just going to physically overwhelm them. So you've got to kind of guide him in that way. And so you'll live with him being a 35% three-point shooter versus posting up and dunking on you all day long,
Yeah. Like a 80% true shooting percentage when attacking the rim versus, right. Like hitting those 35% from three.
But, Aiden's a really smart kid, very hard worker. As you said, with him being in Kansas City, Blue Valley is, I could jog there in probably a half an hour from my house. It's not too far from me, or I could drive there in 10 minutes. It's close. I've been able to watch him ever since he was finishing up middle school. You see the strides that go along each year. I think the biggest thing is just playing with a little more confidence, with a little bit more edge to him. I think he knows what he's capable of. It's just seeing a couple of those things happen a little more regularly, and he's going to be okay. But I think he's picked a good spot. I think he's picked a guy from a mentality standpoint, from a knowing how to motivate people, that's going to speak to him and speak to what motivates him pretty well. And I'm excited to see what he's going to do in Columbia.
You saw him, I think, earlier in the fall when he was working out and going through just kind of skill work there. What's he trying to do as far as improving his ball handling situationally, and what's he doing as far as in honing that jumper, or at least you were able to see when you got to watch him go through that workout? So
the day I was in with him, he was shooting mostly jump shots as we were in. He was actually working out in somebody's house who had their own gym built into the house. It was a pretty nice house, let me tell you. but it wasn't a full gym. So, you know, he was just getting up shots. And also, I mean, quite frankly, I was probably disrupting the workout because I was running my mouth to him the entire time, you know, talking a little trash and just this new world. We don't ever get to sit down with these kids and get to know them just as people, right? They don't get to sit down with us and get to know us as people like we used to when I first started 21 years ago. Now it's just 20 guys sticking an iPhone in a dude's face and asking the same four questions, right? So there's a lot of that going on, but you know, he gets his shots up every day. I know he does a lot of work. People may remember Marcus Walker, who was a big time star in the Kansas City area, played in Nebraska. He gets in and works a lot with him. He's not afraid of getting in the gym and putting in work. And so that's why I said the next thing is just bringing that confidence over, and it'll come. It's just got to understand for Aiden that he's not going to be Magic Johnson as a ball handler or passer, but you can get consistently where you can go and create off two or three dribbles somewhere in that range and get to your spots. That's the level that he's getting to. And I don't think he's too far away from that. And once he hits that and adds that confidence element, there's just such a level that he can take his game to because of his physical attributes too.
I think it's interesting. You know, you mentioned his middle school, you know, I think back then he was playing alongside Mark, playing alongside Grady Dick and Taj Manning. And, you know, that's a pretty packed middle school roster. And then you go to MoCan and you're, you know, having to maybe split some time with Terrace Reed and other guys who want to get their touches or who have to, you know, sort of balance all that out. I think that's been the one thing I've been curious to see from him is what happens if you put him in a more expansive offensive role and you sort of say, you're a focal point of the action. We're going to put you in the mix and we want you to go create. We want you to be dynamic. How does that change for him? And what does that sort of unlock? I think that's what I'm most interested to see when he gets to Columbia is I think he's in a situation now where he'll be empowered in an offensive set, at least offensive sense, at least in the half court.
Yeah. Yeah. And also you've seen things like, you know, the Pangos All-American camps are what they are. They're pretty much high level pickup games, you know, open runs. But you see him, he gets out in those situations and he kind of flourishes, right? Because the game is suited to his strengths. But I feel like if you see him in that setting, you see him with his high school team, you see him with MoCan, and you kind of blend all those three together, you get a pretty good idea of who he is and what he's going to be. And, you know, again, I think a lot of this is, you mentioned playing with those other guys. One of the things that kids really struggle with when they go from high school to college is they don't understand how to play with other guys who are as good or better than them. And Aiden's been doing that for a while. And I think he's kind of embracing the idea of taking on the challenge of like, hey, hold up. I want to show you guys that I'm the man. You know, it's not Mark Mitchell and Grady Dick and Aiden. It's, you know, I'm just as good as these guys, or I should be thought of in the same light as these guys. And, you know, that's the challenge that I think he's pushing himself to, you know, it's something that he's accepted and he's pushing himself to prove it to people, but he's going to do that within a team context. He's not a me kind of guy. And I just think all those things speak well or bode well for his future.
Well, so you mentioned Mark Mitchell, and I figure while we have you here, we should at least get your professional take on the situation with Mark. He's a guy who has sort of long had this list of four schools. Obviously, UCLA and Duke appear to be kind of the favorites at this point, with Kansas and Missouri. I guess, lagging a little bit behind. At least that's kind of what we've been trying to educate our listeners with. But Mark is a guy who's still letting the process play out a little bit, and he's a guy who's still taking visits. So, like, what are we doing? How is this going to wrap up? I'm trying to get a read on exactly what. I mean, obviously, Mark Mitchell is a potentially one and done kind of level player. What is Missouri's role in the recruitment here?
First of all, I don't see it wrapping up until at least early December, barring some changes on things. And Missouri's role here is, Konzo Martin, and Mark has told me this multiple times, has built a really, really strong relationship with Mark and his family. I think they find him to be incredibly relatable. I think they find him to be somebody that Mark is potentially interested in learning from. So that has kept Missouri in there, and it's kept him in there to the point that, you know, he's taken two official visits there now. So I don't think Mark's not the kind of dude who's just taking visits just to take visits. Like, I don't think he's really out here trying to waste people's time. But I do think ultimately, as you said, at the end of the day, just from being around and talking to the parties involved and everything, that I do think this is and has been heading towards a UCLA-Duke collision course, which is part of why it's so good that you got Aiden in all this. You know, you got the guy that, if you'd have gotten neither of them, you'd really be in a bad shape, right? But they made sure, hey, let's get Aiden. Let's get him done. And then, you know, we're kind of playing with house money in terms of going after Mark. You know, I don't think, you know, even the most heavily, you know, I don't know how many of even the greatest Mizzou fans out there are really thinking like, hey, you know, I'm putting Mark in my lineup for next year, right? I don't think there's a lot of projected Mizzou lineups right now from even the most super fans that is including Mark Mitchell in it. But hey, you got a chance. You might as well hang around in there. And, you know, who knows? Maybe you get surprised. But I do know, I have known Mark for a while. I know him well. I know some of his coaches well. I do think he has a genuine and sincere like and appreciation of Konzo and what he's doing. I just don't know if that's going to get it done, because I think that the key with him is not only is he trying to get to the NBA like some of these guys, but like he knows he may only be there for 1 or 2 years. And I think he wants a legitimate chance to compete for a Final Four. So if Missouri can convince him of that, then maybe they'll have a chance. But I just don't know where they are in that process.
And I think that's always been the question here, is just what can Mizzou do to make the argument compelling? You know, I think on the visit, you know, they have Aiden in town, they've got Max Wisner in town, you know, they're bringing in faces that he knows and that he's familiar with and he has relationships with.
Marcus Denman hollering at him, you got everything.
Yeah. So you've got everything there. And I think at the end of the day, it's like you said, what's the calculus that makes this interesting? Is it Missouri somehow jumps out to a fast start this year with a rebuilt core, and he can say, oh, there's going to be some pieces there that, you know, might be able to surround me with that I wasn't quite as sure about. To me, I think that's the only real thing that can move it, is you look at it and you say, oh, you put Aiden and I there next year. Now you've suddenly got a little bit more of a sped up process. Outside of that, I just don't know what's going to make the argument that much more sort of enticing. But what we'll see.
Yeah, I think that's a fair way of looking at it. And I think, you know, obviously I'm in Kansas City, so I'm around a lot of Missouri fans. And despite being a KU grad, Missouri fans seem to tolerate me pretty well. You know, I feel like people have got a pretty good idea of what it is. And it's interesting because, you know, Kansas fans sure don't think they're getting them either. You know, so I think this is one where people locally just kind of understand that, you know, this is a kid that maybe just wants to get away, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, I think like even a few years ago, right about the time Missouri was like having him on campus for like unofficial visits, and it was very clear he was going to be a top level player. Like, I had talked to a few people that had even expressed to me that they thought it was entirely possible that he just skipped college altogether. So I was still surprised that he made that full pivot and sort of seems to have closed the door on any of like the professional routes. Because I do think, obviously, for pretty much any high level kid these days, that, you know, the end goal is to get to the NBA. So
yeah, yeah. Well, I think he's a smart. Marcus is a very smart, measured kid. I think he's while he wants to get there, he's not one of those guys who wants to skip any steps. He's had some injuries that I think have maybe helped him understand that, you know, nothing is granted, nothing's given. And also, you know, he's got an older brother who works in the entertainment industry that, while not sports, is still an eye opener and somebody's legitimately in this world with crazy things being thrown around and at people and stuff. So I think maybe there's a little bit of a better understanding of what that life is like and what that life can be like. And also important is this is, you know, I don't think he has a family, and this is unfortunate for some kids. It's not every kid. I think we overblow it sometimes, but I don't think there's a family that's been sitting around planning how they're going to spend their millions from him since he was 14 years old. You know what I mean? Like, does his family hope he makes it? Yeah. But, you know, I don't think he's being treated as a meal ticket. He's being treated as a son and as a brother. And let's make sure that we put this kid in the best position to make these things happen. And also, you know, probably NIL isn't hurting anything either.
No.
Yeah.
No. You can certainly capitalize that in the LA market there.
Boss, one of the last things I wanted to get to before we cut you loose is I will say, when it comes to a lot of the national recruiting analysts, like, your opinion on players is one that I've always felt like the most on board with. I think that's probably the safest way to say it. I think your consistency and scouting and all that tends to be on the up and up. And so I'm paying you this compliment because you were one of the first guys to really talk about the ceiling on a kid like Trevin Brazile. And there are a lot of Mizzou fans who sort of rolled their eyes a little bit when Mizzou took a commitment from a kid who at the time was unranked. A kid who very clearly is a late bloomer. But I'd like for our listeners and even as a good question from myself, just to hear your take, is what attracts you about Trevin Brazile's skill set, and what sort of ceiling do you think that kid has?
First of all, thank you. I appreciate the compliment. It means a lot because, you know, we're in a being held to opinions about that were made when dudes were 17 and 18 years old, when they're 22 and 25 and 28 isn't always the easiest way to go. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But in a case of a guy like Brazile, you know, There's things that you do this for a while and you start to notice some things. Every case is different. Not everything is the same, but you find out a guy like him, hey, he's young for his class a little bit, right? He doesn't have a lot of experience just yet. And you just see some natural instincts and then you see, wow, look at him physically. Imagine what he's going to look like in two or three more years once he matures. And you go back to your mind and you think of guys who you missed on, right? And a lot of times they're guys who look just like Trevin Brazile, who maybe a little skinny, maybe a little goofy, a little bit inexperienced, but, you know, there's just some glimmers. And I always look at it like this. When I saw Brazile play, what I noticed was, even if he only had, say, 8 or 10 points, those 8 or 10 points all came in a fashion that nobody else on the court could really make those plays happen, right? And you got to pay attention to that. It's one thing if you're long and you're athletic and you're just doing whatever, but it's really nothing special that somebody else couldn't do. But when you're making plays that nobody else can, even if you're not yet consistent at it, the fact that you can make those plays that others can't are something that you really need to take notice of. And so that kind of stuck with me with him, and it sticks to me with others like him. You don't want to go too crazy. You don't want to be like, oh man, yeah, I could see this guy playing the NBA someday. But I mean, my gosh, I could see him, and it sounds like, you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, sounds like Mizzou's really, really excited about him so far and his potential. Like, I do feel that at a minimum, this is one of those guys that a couple years down the road, everyone's gonna be like, how on earth was this guy not ranked? You know, what were these guys doing? And I'm not even really had that much of a leg to stand on, because I'm gonna be like, yeah, hey, I told everyone he was good enough to play at Mizzou and that he was gonna have big upside, but you know, I didn't have the guts to like put him in the national top 50 or something like that. You know, we just kind of plugged him in at the end of the rankings, and then because of 9 million people reclassifying, he's not even in the top 150 anymore. But I think that I'll at least feel good, assuming he's able to do it, knowing that, hey, when this guy committed and everyone said, what the hell, I at least knew that he was good enough to play there, and they had a chance to far exceed any expectations for him. And in that case, I would call that a win on him. Even if it ends up that we didn't rank him high enough or anything like that, at least there was a recognition of the talent and an honest thing of like, hey, I don't know how good this guy could be. He could be a bust, but like if he booms, like he's really, really going to boom. And why wouldn't you take a chance on that guy from Missouri?
It seems like this class sort of fits that mold. Like you look at a guy like an Anton Brookshire, who if you see him up close, I don't know if the 6'1" in shoes measurement is stretching it all that much, but you watch him on film, just a ton of skill and polish for a guy his size and his age with the ball in his hand and his ability to shoot it. You look at a guy like Yaya Keita, who maybe not, you know, ideal size, you know, from a height perspective, but high motor, can make a lot of plays, showing some face-up ability, the ability to drive it from the elbow. It seems like what the staff did in this class was sort of say, let's look at tools and let's look at upside, and maybe we have to eat some growing pains in year one or two.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I wrote about that with them, about how it wasn't the sexiest class on paper. But if you're looking a few years down the road, I think you can maybe look at what Rick Barnes did at Tennessee when he got Admiral Schofield and Grant Williams and all those guys, right? And John Fulkerson, I think, was even in that. It wasn't like a super exciting class for rankings. They didn't beat out a bunch of SEC powerhouses to get those guys, but they saw something in them. They believed in their system fit, and they believed in their upside. And man, they struck gold, and those guys grew together. And by the time those guys were juniors, like no one wanted to deal with those guys. Like they were a major problem, right? And I really feel like, if these guys get through these first couple of years, that, you know, a few years down the road, Mizzou really may have something to be super excited about. And to me, it's kind of fun as a fan to see those steps and see, okay, how do these guys look fresh as freshmen? How will they look next year? You know, how could they look 3 years down the road? And it is a group that I think is going to be a fun group. I mean, gosh, Yaya, I mean, wait till fans get a chance to experience him just on a personal level. Man, what an awesome kid. Like, unbelievably awesome kid. Like, that's the kind of kid that if you had to adopt a kid, he's the kind of kid you want to adopt. Like, you want him around your kids. You want him to be friends with you. He's just a bubbly personality. He works his butt off. His story of what he's been through personally is pretty incredible. And I think just, you know, how do you not root for a guy like that? And I think they've got guys who, they don't have anyone who's been coddled. They don't really have anyone who's been told how great they are since they're in eighth grade. But they've got guys who've been told, hey, look, you've got some talent, but hey, you know, you might be a little borderline for this level, but we believe in you, and here's what we're going to do. And I think if all those guys are embracing that process and on board with it, then really good things from happening. I know with just some conversations with the Mizzou staff during the summer and the fall that they're really, really encouraged by the signs that they've seen out of these young guys so far. And so, you know, hopefully that rings true, because everyone loves their team this time of year, right? Everyone like, oh, the freshmen are all playing in the spot.
You know? I don't know. Some Mizzou fans seem skeptical right now about what they have. Right, Eric. Right.
I mean, you know, oh, it's coach speak. But, you know, I've got relationships with a lot of coaches where we get far beyond coach speak, you know, and I don't go throwing their business out there, else they wouldn't be telling me some of the real stuff on it. But I do think this is going to be kind of a fun group to watch grow. And I'm really looking forward to watching them. You know, I kind of like this. Like, I'm not one of these guys like, yeah, I want to be right with our rankings, but I guess time in doing this has helped me to understand that while I'm going to do everything I can to not miss a single one of them, I'm going to miss them. And I would much rather guys turn out to be better than I thought than not as good. And this is a fun group of guys who are all right on that borderline of like, hey, you know, maybe they're a little bit of a reach, but not that much of a reach. And, you know, if you get, if 60% of that class hits, you could really be working with something. And, you know, that's, you've got to take part of recruiting is you got to figure out who's going to be, who you're going to get to say yes. Right. And then you've got to figure out, okay, which of those guys who will tell us yes fit what we're trying to do. And then you've got to figure out how do they mesh together. And I think with this group, you've got a group that's pretty indicative of the culture that Quanzo Martin wants around his program, of the tone he's trying to set. And I think you see that with some of the other guys, some of the sophomores and stuff too. You know, it's kind of an intriguing group to watch moving forward.
Well, I'm going to change your name from E-Boss to Mizzou Sunshine Pumper, because that was that's going right? to get a lot.
No, I've not hidden from it. I'm a pretty big believer in Quanzo Martin eventually getting it done and what he's doing. I just think there's gonna prove to be a lot of substance at some point behind what, you know, some people I think have wondered, well, he's talked a big game, when he's gonna do this, whatever. Like, you know, it's hard. And I think a couple of healthy porters probably changes the way people talk about Quanzo Martin right about now. You know what I mean? And so I'm willing to roll the dice. Maybe I'll be wrong. And if I'm wrong, I'll be like, hey, you guys were right. I shouldn't have been a believer in this, but I just, something about it, I'm not ready to count that guy and what he's doing out yet. And, you know, maybe another year or two, but I do think that the foundation of something that could be pretty cool is in place right now.
Yeah. We talk about, you know, Sam and I have talked about it ad nauseum. You know, you get a couple healthy years from the porters. Are you having an EJ Liddell in your program? Are you having a Caleb Love in your program? And suddenly, you know, you have those two or three guys that I think the top end of the rotation has been missing. And that's really where you are. And, you know, the misses are what they are at this point. You can't redo them, but I think you have to sort of look at what's happened now. Yeah, cool. If they've got a good developmental class, they've got a guy in Shaw who's the kind of, you know, figure piece you want to have in a rotation. And if they can show some strides, then I think you begin to sort of get that momentum going that you want.
I mean, even just the Michael Porter year, I think we now see in the NBA, now that he's healthy, now that he's, you know, a max contract player, a guy who's looks like he could be a perennial all-star as long as he doesn't get hurt or doesn't, you know, go too Hollywood on us. Imagine if that guy had been healthy for his entire year at Mizzou. I think they would have won a few games in the NCAA tournament and made a lot more noise, and people would be feeling a lot better about that whole year. But, you know, the dude was hurt. He was hurt so bad that it cost him his first year and a half in the NBA. So you got to take that into account. You know, of course, that's the dice you roll when you're going with a one and done guy like that. Right. And, you know, unfortunately for Missouri, he got hurt. Unfortunately, his brother got hurt too. And, you know, that's the real kicker is it's, you know, wasn't just one porter hurt. It was two porters hurt. Or I guess if you go to the women's team, it's been multiple porters hurt. It's just unfortunate luck, you know, but, you know,
Hoping for the best for Javon out at Pepperdine.
Yeah. Yeah. And he looks like he's good, by the way. I know people don't want to hear that, but Javon's pretty talented. So, you know, that family, they know how to hoop in that family for sure.
Yeah. Well, Eric, I do want to give you time. I know that you've taken time out of some thrilling youth gymnastics to join us. So we want to make sure that you have ample time to get back to that. Everybody should go follow you on Twitter if they're not already. It's at eBoss Hoops. But where else are we looking for Eric Bossy on the internet?
24/7 Sports, of course. Occasionally, you'll see me on CBS Sports HQ doing some stuff. But those are the main places. I'm not a big Instagram guy. I use that for pictures of my family and seeing how my friends are doing stuff like that. I haven't fully gone over that, and I'm I'm definitely not a Snapchatter or a TikToker. I'm a little bit too old for those, but Twitter is always a good place to find me among the various message boards on 24/7. I'm pretty accessible, you know, and if you want to talk a little college basketball, a little bit of recruiting, dabble in some Major League Baseball. And as you guys are learning, I'm also becoming a big time whiskey and bourbon aficionado. So any of those topics are always good for me.
Yeah. On the whiskey note, I know that's, how we kind of connected a little bit. The hunting, how's it going these days? And what's been your favorite pour of the last, we'll say, 6 months to a year? Favorite pour?
Favorite pour was a George T. Stagg. I think it was the 2018 bottle. It was incredible. And so I like all the Stagg Juniors pretty well too. So, but George T. Stagg, that's my number one so far.
I'd say that's a good selection. Like I'm a Stag guy. Tater, that's right? A Stag guy. Well, you didn't say Blanton's. I think that's the tater bottle.
Yeah, yeah. Blanton's is fine, but you know, whatever. I'm just as happy with a Knob Creek 12 year as I am with the Blanton's.
Yep.
You know what I mean? But it's to each their own. But the hunt is definitely a part of the excitement with it, and it's got me all in. You know, I just got the Midwinter's Night. Or Midwinter's Dram, however the heck you say it, last week. That's this year's is a very good one. I was pretty excited about that. So yeah, you know, I always find a little something.
Yeah, I know you also got the Little Book Chapter 5 too, right?
Yeah, which I have not cracked into yet, but I think that is on the deck. Well, I'm heading to Las Vegas this week, so I don't think I'm gonna take that with me. But the next weekend I'm home, that will be the one that I pop into next.
Yeah, so the next time you're in Johnson County and you want a good pour of bourbon, it sounds like Eric's got a good stock these days.
Yeah, I've got a bunker for sure.
Well, boss man, I appreciate your time. It's good having you on. You know, keep doing what you're doing. I think you're doing awesome. Everybody, go subscribe to 247 Sports. It's well worth the coverage. And I tell you what, man, like the team of guys that you got. I think, like, you know, Deshaun is one of the guys that I follow also. You've got a team of young guys who are working hard and they're doing a really, really terrific job.
Deshaun London, Travis Branham,
Travis.
Of course, we've got the venerable Jerry Myers still hanging around, starting to bring some stuff back out again, but really excited about those young guys. And I got to be honest, it's a lot of fun for me now, you know, at 46 years old in the twilight of my career, being able to help some of these young guys because I got help along the way, but it's fun to see their excitement and all the things that I'm bitter about now that they're not bitter about yet. And it kind of keeps me going.
Well, I appreciate it, sir. And I appreciate your time and we'll talk soon.
Sounds good, guys.
So again, I would really like to thank Eric for taking some time. He was taking his daughters to gymnastics practice and stepped out to the car to handle our podcast. So I think that shows how committed to the game Mr. Bossy is, and we appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. Got to move them subs too.
Yeah, so if you're at all interested in recruiting, I recommend signing up at 247. They do a great job. And then really, like, I wasn't blowing smoke. Like, I really do think Eric and his team, like, he's got some young guns that are hot after it, and I've always liked Jerry Meyer too, so I'm happy that Jerry Meyer is getting back and involved. So Matt, you had any clear takeaways from what Bossy had to say?
No, I think, you know, you want to hear guys who I think, one, are seasoned, and two, are objective in sort of how they evaluate programs, players, and coaches. And I think, you know, you and I have talked a lot over the last, you know, year or two about certain segments of the fan base sort of souring on Zoe and on recruiting and on what's happening here. And I think, you know, obviously Eric's just one guy and just one voice, you know, in a larger conversation that happens around evaluating a guy like Konzo Martin. But I do think when a guy like that says, hey, I'm a believer in this guy and what he's doing and the model that he's using, I think you should give that some credence and really think about what that means. And, you know, we'll see what that looks like this year. You know, we may get in to, you know, as we talked about, you know, maybe Missouri gets off to a fast start and they look way better than anyone anticipated. Conversely, maybe this thing just hits the skids really quickly and, you know, the development isn't there and things really bottom out fast and, you know, everything's on the table. But I think the one thing I do is I always try and listen to guys who I think have perspective and experience. And if Bossy's saying that, you know, he's still a believer and he's still going to put some stock in what Zoe's trying to do, then I think, you know, that should temper, you know, some frustrations that people maybe might have out there about, you know, what's going to look like a reset year. And we've been pretty clear about that. We think it's that.
Yeah. And I think like, unless you're, you know, Kansas, you're pretty much going to have a reset year every once in a while. Missouri needs to build more, and they need to build in a way that is consistent. And if you want the program to be at a certain level, like that build has to happen. I think on this pod in this space, like you and I think it's probably more so me has been accused of, you know, kind of being an apologist for Konzo Martin. And part of the reason why I find myself more in Zoe's corner than not, you know, even though as he was coming in stylistically, he and I have very different philosophies on how I want to watch basketball. I do think that he is adapting to that mode. And so that's why I'm probably as intrigued to watch Missouri basketball going into this year than I've been any of the previous seasons. Because I feel like he finally has the roster to play the way that he's talked about playing. But more so, like, you know, you talk to somebody like Eric Bossy, you talk to other people that are in the industry that know coaching and know Konzo Martin, and by and large, like, everybody loves Zoe. And not just as a dude, like, obviously there's no way that you can talk to Konzo Martin and not respect the kind of guy that he is, but everybody's like, no, like he's kind of got this thing. Like he knows what he's doing. Like, you know, Tony Bennett obviously is a guy who, people think, and rightfully so, is a top five coach in college basketball right now. And Tony Bennett's a guy who told Jim Stirk that he should hire Konzo Martin. You know, and so at what point do we start trusting the experts on this? And honestly, like, my general take on Konzo Martin is when he was hired, I was fine with it. Like, you know, he's a guy who's gonna raise the floor, right? Like, fine. That's what Missouri needed right then. They needed somebody who is not going to bottom out the way Commanders had bottomed out. And Konzo was going to do that. Great. Go be you, Zoe. But what I've watched, and this is why I'm a little probably more bullish on Missouri coming into this year than most people are, is a guy who can just flat coach. Like, he gets his guys ready to play. Missouri almost never takes the floor in the SEC with the most talented lineup. And yet, his worst season as a Missouri head coach was with Jordan Geist as your leading scorer. And no offense to Jordan Geist, we all grew to love the player that Jordan Geist became. But Jordan Geist is your leading scorer? In an 18-game SEC season? And they won five games. Like to me, that's where you're talking about what the baseline is and why anybody who's predicting Missouri to win less than five games has not been paying attention to the type of coach that Konzo Martin is.
You know, you and I have talked about that. You know, you watch Missouri and it's clear they scout. They come in with a clear game plan. And there are some nights where, you know, things just get sideways like it did at Mississippi State a year ago. And you're just like, okay, yeah, that happens. But I think most of the time they come out and they're engaged. They have a game plan. They try and execute it. They make it a pain in the ass to play them. The question has always been, and as I alluded to with Bossy, was those needed are those 2 to 3 dudes on a roster. And if Aiden Shaw is the first one of those guys that you get, that's a step forward. The question is, will you start to see Yaya Keita, Anton Brookshire, and Trevin Brazil become the 60% of the kids they recruited here who are going to grow into, you know, really, really good and a really, really cohesive core around Shaw? And now you're suddenly, you know, spending the next 2 years with a young core and maybe some transfers that are going to collectively be able to share the burden as that transition happens. Maybe that roster is not going to be a top 5 or 6 one, but this year it gets you to 8 and 10, 9 and 9. Next year it positions you to be a bubble team or get a bid. But along the way, you're building that momentum to where you can get the 1 or 2 other assets, whether that's a prep player or it's in the transfer portal, to put alongside Shaw, and you're beginning to, you know, cook with some gas. And I think there are still going to be fans that are going to say, it'll be year 7 and we're just talking about things getting going. I don't have anything that's going to placate you at this point. If you're going to be frustrated, you're going to be frustrated. I'm just saying that that's the sort of trajectory you have to look at this point. And I think the one thing we didn't get to touch on with Bossy was, you know, Missouri, for the better part of a decade, I think its issue hasn't always been recruiting and in terms of attaining talent. I think Missouri's issue has always been retaining and developing talent. Like, I think I looked this up before we started potting tonight. Since 2012, if you look at like Missouri's recruiting footprint of Kansas City, the rest of Missouri, and the St. Louis metro area, there's been 34 top 150 players in the 247 composite index. 8 of them spent some form of time with Missouri. There's been about a dozen top 50 kids in that span, 4 committed to Mizzou and 1 transferred in. So in a vacuum, Missouri's getting 1 out of 4, 1 out of 3 top end players. But as Bossy said, MPJ gets hurt. You know, Jonte Porter plays a season, blows out his knee. Cam Beachide transfers in from Notre Dame and is dismissed before he ever plays a game. You know, Jeremiah Tillman plays multiple years, but really doesn't hit until year 4. And Aiden Shaw hasn't shown up on campus yet. Like, that's really what your top 50 has looked like over the last decade or so. And then even if you go out to a guy like a Mark Smith who transferred in, he was a top 80 kid, but he had injuries. He didn't always perform consistently. Torrance Watson, oh boy, that guy just regressed from the day he showed up. And he only had Jordan Barnett for a season and a half. So it's really been, as we've talked about, there's been some top end talent here, but it just hasn't sustained itself. It hasn't developed. It hasn't, you know, really rooted itself here. And Missouri's been asking a lot of guys whose ceilings just aren't there. This is a roster this year where I think if you believe Bossy that there's 3 guys in this class that can grow into a stable core, you want to see that or see signs early on that that happens. And then when Shaw gets here, you have half of a rotation that's underclassmen but have high upside. I think that's really where you're going at this point. And that's, I think, what you want to see. Will that happen? I don't know. But at least you can sort of see a plan and sort of a blueprint in place for that.
Correct. So that's where we are. I think our plan is we're going to take another week off. So we're going to be regular off season, 2 weeks off. Come back. And then we'll go weekly from there on out. We'll have some previewing to done because in 2 weeks, shoot, Matt, I mean, we're staring down the barrel of the season starting. And so we can actually like begin to consider games. So, yeah, so 2 weeks is the 25th. And like the next, like game week is like that first week, November, right?
Yep.
So there we go. Yeah, I don't know exactly the date of Mizzou's first game. I just know like the dates that I have to get like these previews done by. The first one's being published in a week. So you'll get to read all about how much I do not like Tom Crean's roster in Athens.
a bold take there.
I may be out on a limb on that one. So we're going to take 2 weeks off. By then, we will have a full 5 previews for everybody to read. We will be back recording on the 25th for everybody's enjoyment on the 26th. And then we'll go weekly because it's season. And that's what we're going to do. Any last words before we get out of here, Matt?
Nope. Thanks to Eric Bossy again for giving us time.
Yep. Thanks, everybody. Go ahead and like and subscribe and do all those kinds of things. Make sure that you are, if you can, share this podcast with your Missouri basketball friends. I'm sure that they will enjoy listening to Matt and I talk about nonsense. So until then, 2 weeks from now, thanks for tuning in.